I want to talk briefly to start with just a little bit about open education, so the big picture idea and where LAMS fits within that. I want to give you then a bit of an update of some of the key things happening in LAMS, particularly the new features in LAMS 2.2, because today is the official release of LAMS 2.2, and Ernie and all the technical team, many of whom are here, have done an awesome job in getting that ready, and so I'll mention that. You have no idea how hard the guys work. It's just phenomenal effort. And then lastly, I want to end off with some quite out there ideas for some new visualizations for learning designs. And I'm going to sort of do a bit of audience interaction. I want you to let me know which ones you like and which ones you don't. We'll see how we go. So, a little bit about open education. In one sense, the idea of freely sharing educational materials with each other as teachers, so being able to build on each other's work and so on, has been with education for a very long time. I'd be happy to say thousands of years. It's just part of the blood of being an educator that you think about sharing good ideas, good teaching practices, you know, good things. But in recent years, particularly the last few years, as the success of free and open source software and other types of free sharing have started to take off, people have started to now sort of crystallise these ideas as they apply to open education. And in particular, a thing called the Cape Town Declaration is a sort of about a page and a half statement of principle about the ideas of free sharing in open education. I was one of about 30 people who a bit over a year ago got together to try and put this together. Other people like Jimmy Wales, the leader of Wikipedia, and others. So I tried to crystallise, you know, what this vision of open education is all about. And that's the website for it. If you haven't heard of this before, I'd encourage you to have a look at it because it's a very handy statement of what I think many of us are sort of aspiring towards for the future of education. You can also sign the website, you know, put your name to it if you believe in those principles. And I should say, just as by way of clarification, open education had a particular meaning sort of a decade or two ago as sort of distance and flexible learning. You know, the Open University from the UK comes from that particular sort of version of the phrase. This is a newer version of that that's more around the free and open sharing of resources. And one of the statements from the Cape Town Declaration is this one: everyone should have the freedom to use, to customise, to improve and redistribute educational resources without constraint. And I think hidden in there are two different types of freedoms. One is a freedom from cost. You know, when you as a teacher come to make decisions about materials for your students, when they come to access them, if there's a cost barrier to you doing that, that limits your ability to be effective as an educator. It limits your students' learning. It's not to say there are no costs in creating educational materials. There's lots of costs, both in time and potentially in money, and they need to be covered somewhere. But the key thing is, if we can make sure those costs don't exist when you come to do teaching, when students come to do learning, it can have a great impact of, you know, opening up and freeing education. So we're looking for a freedom from cost, but there's a second freedom, and for me, I think even more important, and that's the freedom to change. The idea that when you find a resource and you go, oh, this is really good, but it's not quite what I want for my students. I need to take something out, or I'd like to tweak the wording, or I want to rearrange some bits of it. This also is a very fundamental part of being a teacher, that trying to adapt a material to your local students' needs and their specific abilities and needs and so on that might be different to the person who created it that got it from elsewhere. So the Cape Town Declaration is also about the freedom for educators to modify and to change. Now, under current copyright law, generally you're not able to do that. You know, the laws of our society say that when someone creates something and applies normal copyright to it, you're not allowed to change it. You're not allowed to do these things. And so open education is saying we need new ways of coming at copyright, new types of open licenses, which say, even if I'm the copyright holder in this, I grant you a license that says you're free to change it. You know, I made it, so I can say what happens. And what I say is, you can do what you like with it. And so initiatives like the Creative Commons and others are driven by this principle of trying to open up and free the things that you're allowed to do with resources. That's a quick screenshot of the Cape Town Declaration. As I say, I'd encourage you to have a look at that if you've not seen it before. And it's probably no surprise to you that LAMS is an example of open education in sort of at two important levels. The software itself we've made freely available as open source software so anyone can get it and use it. But also the LAMS community, where we share these sequences with each other. We do that under free licenses, where you're free not only to use it, but also to change it and adapt it. And so, you know, for me, the big picture ideas of open education apply to the particular area of learning design and our work on LAMS. And it's worth saying that for me, at least, you know, I've been doing LAMS now for about 6-7 years. those ideas were with me right from the start, even though the Cape Town Declaration was not yet to come for six or more years later. And what was on my mind was the sense that we want to be able to capture and describe these good pedagogical approaches. We want to be able to make them then shareable. If I describe a good way of teaching something, say a role play, I can share that with you. You can look at that design, think about it, reflect on it. And then also, hopefully, we'd have software which made it easy to adapt and change. You could actually have had all of the LAMP software, but without the drag-and-drop authoring. So it could have run things, it could have done students, it could have had monitoring, but the creation process could have been some incredibly complex technical task. But I felt really very passionately that to make this larger vision possible, we also needed an authoring, a creation interface that was at least as easy as we could reasonably make it. Learning design is not a simple concept, so there is a certain amount of complexity there, but at least to do what we could to make it easy. And behind all that, for me, my biggest fear was that if learning design was going to prove to be important for the future, and I still had that hope and belief, that if it became owned by a particular proprietary software company or approach, that the risk was that they'd create a kind of a locked up file format, which was your designs, and then you wouldn't be able to read or open or share your designs unless you had that piece of software that you had to pay for and so on to do it. And even worse, that if others wanted to run it in a different system, that there'd be no way to unlock that file format. And so for me, it was critically important that even if people didn't use LAMS or use some other system, that the description of a learning design was done in a way that was open and readable so that we'd never get sort of locked to any one particular system. So those are some of the things that drove me from the very early days that for me now fit very nicely with this new sort of growing movement globally of open education and particularly the Cape Town Declaration. So that's one big picture idea that kind of sits behind. I know many of you share this view, but I think it's worth sort of reiterating that this is something at the sort of the high level of values and principles that drives what many people do in this field, not just LAMS, but Martin Dougiamis, my colleague who leads Moodle, and many others. Somewhere in the background, we have this belief that that's what we're trying to achieve, ultimately to do more effective teaching as teachers, to encourage more effective learning for learners. So that's one kind of big picture question. I want to now come more specifically to some things we're doing with LAMS recently. I mentioned at the start of this session that I'm delighted that Paul and his colleagues at NTU have joined us in our work as a LAMS International partner. For those of you who don't know about this, LAMS International is a kind of a services company where you're able to pay for services if you want, training, hosting, technical support, but you're not required to pay for it. This is part of, for me, the free and open idea. If it's effective for you, if you want to, you can, but it's not a requirement. And so that company, LAMS International, which I have a role in as a director, has these partners in a number of countries. We have Data Pacific from Japan is our colleagues here. They've been here at the conference. I can't see them at the moment. They may have had to leave. Yes, one of our colleagues, thank you, who's been with us, doing some great work with LAMS in Japan. Hwa Chong University in China, Solution Grove in the United States. And now, as I mentioned before, we're delighted to have Nanyang Technological University from Singapore joining us. And I thought I'd just mention, this is a quote from Daniel Tan, Paul's colleague and leader of the Centre for Educational Development. He said this, "When I heard James Steele sharing about LAMS in the agenda events, I knew my eyes had seen the future. We've progressed together a long way from then, and today marks a partnership that history may well one day identify as an important milestone in the development of online courseware. We're excited that on that day, NTU and LAMS International forged the partnership." And so I'm just very pleased to be working together with other people who are passionate about these ideas and how we continue to disseminate them around the world and in Singapore. So it's just great to have you on board. All right, a second thing. The LAMS Foundation website. Some of you may have visited it and thought, it's a bit tired. It's a bit surprising. There's good software, and yet the website's sort of been not so great. And the honest truth is that the LAMS team, and by team I mean everyone except me, have done some great work on this website to build a new one with lovely resources, beautiful graphic design, and it hit this barrier called me, who just couldn't get enough time to do it properly. Well, I'm sorry it's been so long, everyone. Ernie has waited long for this day. Three may be an exaggeration. But anyway, we have just in the last few days launched a new LAMS Foundation website. That's a screenshot of it. It's a lovely design. You know, I really appreciate all the work everyone's done. And so a new way for people to find out the resources about LAMS, get access to animations, to trial accounts, to wikis and so on. So that's up publicly now. I'd encourage you to, where you have colleagues who want to know about LAMS, this should be useful. All right. LAMS version 2.2. Today's the official release. The technical guys have been busting their guts last night and early this morning to get it out, and it's done. It's out there today. And we will generally now try and aim for 6 monthly releases at our conferences. Can't guarantee we'll always do it. There's a certain barrier that sometimes gets in the way of releases called me. But we will try very hard for the future to make this a regular pattern. And some of you may not be aware, when we rebuilt LAMS from the ground up for version 2, we actually laid a lot of sort of deep infrastructure that would allow us to do new features and new possibilities for many years into the future, but which you couldn't see in the first iteration of that. When we released LAMS version 2.1 about 6 months ago and branching came out, I know a lot of people were really excited. In a sense, much of the branching work actually had been done for several years leading up to version 2, and then we put the finishing touches on it to get it out for 2.1. And so you're going to see this happen quite a bit with LAMS over the next year or two, is that quite powerful features will, with any luck, come out quite rapidly and frequently, not because we're necessarily building them all from the ground up every 6 months, but because we did it several years of really good foundations about a year or two ago that we're now reaping the benefits of. And so again, all credit to the team for sticking at that. Just as a reminder, those of you who haven't seen it, branching in 2.1 is one of the major new features and all the potential that goes with that. There's also what we call optional sequences, in a sense student-chosen branching, where students can choose which path they go on and have the option to go down different pathways or more than one pathway. So they all came in a little while ago, but we're adding more and more to it as time goes on. I want to now do a quick run over. I won't be able to even begin to touch on all the features in 2.2, but just to draw out a few of them so you're aware of what's coming. Some of the core features are we now have student-selected groups, so students can choose which group to go in. And then because of that, if you then use grouping to drive branches or so on, it will inherit through. We have what we call text-based conditions now, where students type certain words or phrases in a tool. You can then pick that up and use that for things like branching and so on. We now have individual gates. That is, rather than the current gate or stop point where everyone gets to a certain point and then as a teacher you either open it and everyone can go through or they have to stop there, you can now let individual students through a gate while keeping others back from the gate. And you can use what we call conditions to decide that process. So a student who got 8 out of 10 or above on the quiz can be let through the gate, but if you didn't, you've got to go back and do more work. So those are new features there. And we've started to do some work on sort of competencies or learning objectives, where you can describe objectives that you have for the whole sequence and then map them onto individual tools. And while at the moment we haven't done much more than that with it, it's just kind of descriptive, in the more medium term, we then want to be able to use things like actually showing, here's a record of students learning, and these activities were mapped against these competencies, which were part of this sequence. So a much richer sort of assessment and reporting environment will be possible around what students do. There's also 4 really exciting new tools. One people have been asking for now forever is a wiki tool. It's in there. It's great, and it's got your kind of standard wiki features. There's a very powerful new data collection tool where you can get students to collect bits of data. Think of sort of excursions or where they've got to go out and get scientific data or record things. You can give them specific instructions on what to record, and then the system will collate all of that. There's a great Google Maps tool where not only can you just have maps with information, but students can actually annotate on the map if you let them and sort of share points of interest, comment on them, and so on. And there's also an online spreadsheet tool. So I'll show you a couple of these at the moment. There's a website that's got all the real detail on that, and so I'd encourage you to have a look at that to see all of it. But just quickly to run through some of them. This is the new grouping tool. So if you choose the new setting, which is learner selected groups, before they go into their groups, they get this page which says, these are the groups and whatever names they have and how many, and they can choose which one they go into. You can, as an author, have settings as to whether they can go into anyone they choose or whether you sort of limit the numbers so that you force them to spread themselves around if a group gets full. So that's all an option there. Once they've chosen their group, then they will see the normal grouping screen, which is the names of the people in the different groups. So you still have that in there.
Excuse me, Tim. Yeah. When they choose a group, if they've already chosen that group, will they
At the moment, no. It's at the moment it's this screen, so pick your group, and then after that you'll see who's in it. But that's a nice suggestion for the future, that if you want to allow it as a teacher that they see who's in groups and then choose which one they go in, I can imagine that that would make sense for the future.
I'll switch that on and off.
Yep. Yeah, so you'd probably have it off by default, but if you wanted to let them do it, you could switch it on. As I sort of indicate to my right, Ernie over here, he's typing it into his phone so that he knows to add it to the very long list of things that I keep asking for. Okay, so that's learner selected groups. Text-based conditions. This is very new, and I think it's going to need some work to fully understand what it could do, but it is potentially very powerful. This allows you to do text matching in some of our tools, like Q&A and forums and so on, to see whether students have said certain words. So I've set up a little one here, which I've called rainbow colours. And my question was, give an example of a colour of the rainbow. So what I've then typed in is the, you know, seven colours of the rainbow. If a student gets one of those, then I can catch that information and use it for branching or something else. So perhaps if they know a colour of the rainbow, I'll then skip them onto the next task. If they don't know any of the colours of the rainbow, maybe I'll put them on a remedial branch to then teach them a bit more about, you know, the colours of the rainbow. I'm thinking of a fairly, you know, early stage primary task here. But the point is that we can start to imagine the use of searching for phrases and words within tools and having found that information, dividing people into different groups. And as you'll see, it's quite powerful. It's not just, you know, what words, but, you know, that they didn't say unwanted words, whether it's exact phrasing or not. So I think this will need some testing and playing to see how it's best used. Nonetheless, that's in the infrastructure today from now on. I think four or five tools have got that feature within it. I mentioned the permission gates, or stop points as I still tend to call them. Up the top you'll see the standard feature, which is you can have everyone stop to the point and no one can get past the gate until you open it, and then everyone goes through. But now there's this extra option on the bottom half of the screen where you can see which students are in the sequence, which of them are waiting at the gate, and you can hand allocate students through. So perhaps students had to do certain tasks that only you know about. When they've done them, you can let them through the gate. If they haven't, then they stay at that point and might have to go off and do other things. At the moment, this is still fairly simple, kind of, you know, lamb sequence style thing. But in the future, I can start to imagine this being more a feature used in kind of online game environments. So if you start to build game-like environments in lambs, we had to achieve a number of objectives. And only once you've achieved those objectives can you get through a gate, perhaps onto a next phase of the game or some other task. We can start to imagine, you know, features where the use of this individual release of gates for students based on achieving certain things could actually allow us to do some quite powerful, you know, types of environments inside lambs and staged progression as they go along. Another thing about the gates is, in addition to the individual release, you can do the individual release based on a condition. And so in this case, what I've done is create a little sequence where that second stop point or gate, I've gone down here, and here I can select that the type of release will be based on a condition rather than, say, based on permission, which is one. And then I choose which input tool controls that condition. And here I've selected Wiki as our new Wiki tool. And what you'll see is I can then create some conditions where if you've done two or more edits in the wiki will be one condition, and if you've done zero or one edits will be the other condition. And the point is I can then map that to whether the gate will open or close. So in effect, I've mapped here to say if you meet the condition two or more edits in the wiki, you can go past this gate. If you don't, if you've less than two edits, well, the gate stays closed. So we've often given the example in the past of quiz score. You know, if you get 8 out of 10, you can go do this or not. But it's not just that. There are many, many other things we can do. Number of forum postings, number of wiki edits, you know, words you said in a forum, and so on. So there's considerable power in the infrastructure now. The next phase is working out the good pedagogical uses of that to suit certain sequences, certain discipline contexts. All right, and just briefly to show you the initial work on competencies, I feel like this is only the start of an area where we will do quite a lot more work in the future. But at the moment, you can edit and create these competencies within LAMS. In the future, we hope we'll be able to read in competencies from elsewhere. If you've already got them in a state curriculum or something or other, you can bring them in. At the moment, you just have to type them in yourself. But the point is, once you've created the competencies at the sort of level of the whole sequence, then there's this new button down here in properties, map to competencies. And so I've got a chat here. It'll then give me this little window that says, these are the competencies within your sequence. Which one applies to this tool? And so I could say, oh, well, this tool will show evidence of teamwork. Now, again, that's only a first step. One of the things, again, that we'd like to do in the future would be, having then done the mapping, can we have evaluation as well? So what would be evidence of good teamwork or excellent teamwork in the chat tool? And so a kind of evaluation matrix where you could look at individual students' conversations and say, you know, no, that did not show satisfactory teamwork, or that showed excellent teamwork. And so what you'd start to get is, at the level of the whole sequence, you'd know one of its competencies is teamwork. You'd know that maps to specific activities within that sequence. You can look at the evidence of the student of what they did individually, and then the evaluation of their teacher saying that these actions were evidence of, you know, great teamwork or poor teamwork. And so you can start to imagine then feeding that all the way back up to things like state curriculum standards and so on. So still at the beginning of what we want to do here, but I'm very pleased to see it started, and it's certainly one of my more medium to long-term visions of a very rich mapping of large, you know, curriculum opportunities down into individual sequence, mapped to individual activities, out to individual student work, evaluated by teachers to say whether it met certain levels, folded all the way back up. And so when an inspector comes to your school and says, show me your lesson plans that show evidence that you are meeting these competencies, you'd press a button in LAMS and it would print out everything because it's already all there mapped for you. And then they'd say, right, well, but show me that your students have met these requirements. And you'd press another button and it would print out all your students' work and your ratings of their work mapped against all the curriculum framework.
Do you want to...
Yeah, so self and peer evaluation or reflection is something I really want to do more on in LAMS. We haven't got to it yet. It is certainly on my mind. And it suits the kind of framework we have too. So, yes, I don't know when, but, yes, definitely want to head that way.
That's a good question. This, to me, I think of that capability in the e-portfolio.
Yep,
so
absolutely.
Do you have a vision to sort of
move into it? Yeah, so, well... LAMS already has this button called Export Portfolio in it, where students can export out a record of all of their learning. At the moment, what you get is a whole bunch of HTML pages of what they've done. So they've got a record of their chat and the learning objects they looked at and so on. But that information is, you don't know what it means. You know, you've got content there, or web pages and things. But if you then embed the competencies into it, then the portfolio could actually read it and say, oh, activity two was an example of teamwork, and here's what the student did. So yeah, so you'd get, in a sense, a semantically rich description of what people have done in the portfolio, as opposed to what we have today, which is all the content, but there's no system intelligence yet there. So yeah, I know we're heading there. That's...
On 2.2, the competencies that you map to the activities, when you export portfolio, it actually says this activity makes this competency.
Ah, see, it's even better than I thought. So, all right. Okay, so that's a little bit of where we're up to in 2.2. There's all sorts of other things, you know, the wiki and so on, so I encourage you to have a look at that to explore it. A few things for 2009 as to where we're going, and then I'll talk about visualization. The LAMS activity planner, or pedagogic planner if you prefer, is something we've been wanting to do for quite some time. It's been vaporware, as I've jokingly referred to, for a while. But the idea is certainly one that the time has come for. We are working on it, and we hope to have it out in the not-too-distant future, at least in its first version, and then get as much feedback as we can quickly. So I'll show a couple of screenshots. Some of you have already seen these. I'm also debating that once we have that, so once we have a whole bunch of good templates and easy editing for the templates, what if I could just go and buy a whole bunch of servers from Amazon and stick that in the cloud and have it as a website where any teacher in the world could just go in and say, I want to get 30 students for a class. Here, I'll call it this class. I want to pick this template and I want to run it right now. And so you could go from start to finish with, you know, setting up a lesson to run on the internet now without any infrastructure needed, without any fights with your IT departments, and just do it. Wouldn't that be a way to help take things forward? So if we can afford to do the cloud bit, which is the bit that turns out to be really expensive, that's something I'd like to do. Even if we don't get that far, the software of having the templates and the easy editing, I definitely want to get out during next year. So that's coming. Deeper integration with learning management system tools. Some of you may have seen we've already got Moodle forums and .learn forums running inside LAMS and even with things like branching and so on. So we're doing more work on that area, and I would say that during 2009 you'll see a version of LAMS where it is fully integrated with Moodle tools to the point where if you said, you know what, I really like the LAMS drag and drop and the running the sequences, but look, we've already got all these Moodle tools. My teachers are used to them. I don't want to introduce another set of tools to them in LAMS. Couldn't I just do the sequencing with LAMS but only using Moodle tools? Well, I expect that will be possible. Now, ideally, I hope you'll actually use both Moodle tools and LAMS tools because there's all sorts of interesting extra features in the LAMS tools. But for all sorts of deployment reasons, some people may need to do that. Well, we want to make that at least possible. Equally, into the future, the more tools of all different kinds that we can get within this sequencing framework, I think, the better. And then finally, just briefly on 2.3, no promises on any specific feature here, but some of the things that we're looking at are instant messaging among students when they're in sequences, which you can turn on or off, reporting of activities up to gradebooks, say in learning management systems and so on, a thing we call floating activities. These are activities which don't sit in the linear sequence but are part of it as kind of support activities. Multiple conditions for branching, so being able to say things like, if you got this quiz score and you did this many edits in the wiki, then you can go here. Passing of data between tools. One of the tools people have often asked for is, could I have a Q&A where everyone gives their answer and we feed the answers forward to the vote tool so everyone then votes on the answers that came from the Q&A? Well, that's something we want to do too, and to actually lay some low-level infrastructure in LAMS to allow for data passing between tools. We've also got a new image gallery tool coming and a SCORM player for those of you who need to play SCORM objects. So that's a little bit about what we're doing. Most of you, I think, have probably seen this today in other presentations, but that's a quick screenshot of a mock-up we did for the activity planner where it says, here are a range of templates or particular teaching approaches that you might want to choose and also get advice on them. And once you've chosen one, this kind of easy editing environment where you have the LAMS sequence running down the page, you have only the most important bit of content that needs filling out. What's the question students need to answer? What website do they look at? You know, what essay topic must they write on? And so the editing process for LAMS becomes one single page. You don't have to know anything about the full authoring environment and all the settings under the hood. They've already been done for you in the template. You, as a kind of, you know, introductory teacher to LAMS, just fill in the content and you're ready to go. You can, of course, take that and then open it in full authoring if you do want to look at it all and change it. It's just you don't have to. So we are going to do this fairly soon, and then we'll be pushing it out to get feedback because we're really keen to see how this can hopefully open up the learning design ideas to a broader audience. And, oh, that's a Moodle forum running inside LAMS. If you haven't seen it, there's an animation you can watch for that on the LAMS website. All right. Visualization. So this is the topic I said I'd properly talk on. I'll do it fairly briefly. One of the things about LAMS that has come up again and again in the evaluations is that the visual presentation of the design has a real impact on teachers. It often helps them to think in new ways about their pedagogy, far beyond just doing a bit of stuff in LAMS. And the iterative process of you design something, hit preview, look at it and go, yeah, and actually that's not quite what I meant. Go back, change it around, save it, preview it again. That whole sort of combination of visualization and previewing has been really quite important. And so what I want to do today is show you some very early first mock-ups of some new visualizations that might be useful for the future. Now, these would be complementary to the standard authoring environment, and the idea here is to find one or a small number of extra visualizations that people feel helps them to think in other new ways about their learning designs. Before I show you that, some of you may have wondered from time to time, where did LAMS authoring come from in the first place? You know, where did this sort of drag and drop thing? Well, let me show you something from a presentation I gave in July 2002. I got up at a conference and I just had PowerPoint and I doodled something that I thought, hey, wouldn't it be cool if we had an e-learning system that did this? And I said, imagine if we had these kind of tools that you could set up and edit the content in them, and then you could drag and drop them into some space and create a sequence of activities. Wouldn't that be a nifty idea? And the interesting thing was that no one had done this before at that stage in e-learning, and no one had even imagined that before. And it was the fact that I didn't know how hard it was to do it in software that allowed me to just doodle it and say, wouldn't this be neat? So I've done something important with the visualizations I'm about to show you. None of the technical team have seen these. I've not shown it to them because I didn't want to know how impossible it was to do them to stop me from trying. Because what I really want to know is, do any of these help you to think in new ways? Because if they do, then the team can kill me for coming up with the idea.
So what you're saying is that the
father
of
land
is actually
PowerPoint? Yes. Isn't that scary? All right, so let's see what we can do. And just a background comment. In a sense, every visualization is a simplification of the total information about something that could be conveyed. And what it does, it draws attention to certain elements and less so to others. So the box and line diagrams actually hides lots of the information. What's the content of the task? What are all the advanced settings and so on? But by simplifying it, it gives you something that you can sort of hold in your mind that helps you to understand, you know, some aspect of it. And it turns out in computer programming, and I'm not a computer programmer, but there's an approach called unified modeling language. And one of the key ideas of this is a number of different representations with different assumptions help you to understand what a piece of software is meant to do. And so that's kind of, that idea has sort of inspired me. Not that I think we should use UML in learning design, just the idea of kind of come at it in different ways. All right, and I do want to really stress, these are very early new ideas. They're so early that they were only done about 12:30 last night. No, this morning. And I should also say, I might be the worst person to come up with new visualizations because I'm so locked to the ideas of the first one that I came up with. Nonetheless, let's have a go and see what we think. I'm going to do this as a bit of audience voting now. So, a couple of different views, a content view, an annotation view, a resizable boxes view, alternative shapes view, competencies view, data flow view, individualized learning view, time view. I'm going to have to do them fast. So that's our normal current LAMS, I've called it boxes and lines, visualization. Well, it's, oh, and I should say, the sort of idea I have here, and this is generally, is we just have some new tabs at the top, and so you could have this as your base reference, but you could click on the tab and sort of switch out to a different representation. All right, so let me just start by pointing out that this, in fact, is another kind of representation, and I've called it the key content representation, because it really draws attention to the most important content. What's the question? What's the website? And so on, and just sort of simplifies the view of the sequence down the side. Now, I didn't intend to focus on this one too much, but as I was getting ready for the talk, I thought, well, this is something we're doing. It is a different way of looking at a sequence. And so here's the question I'm going to ask of you for each one. Does it feel like a good idea? You know, don't really have much view of it. Or I really don't like this visualization, James. Okay, so I'll just try it, hands up. So this concept, who feels like this is a good idea? They'd like this. So just, good number. Okay, quite a lot. You know, could take it or leave it. It's no big deal. Sort of, you know, neutral. Yep, thank you, Karen. Brave. And really doesn't like it. You know, I don't want this. Okay, so most people are, okay.
I like the idea that.
Yeah, it's a bit messy at the moment, but okay. All right, so there's one. Let me try now another one. Okay, so remember normal authoring view. Next one. Annotation view. Sort of grey out the design and allow you to then just in free form doodle on it. And so, well, this bit's the icebreaker bit, and then there's a debate, and then they read it, but this bit's the real key activity that matters, and then there's an essay. So just a free-form layer that you put over the top of your design where you can write as little or as much as you want, draw boxes and so on. Okay. Who'd really like one of them? Okay, take it or leave it? Yeah, dislike it. Okay. No, this is, sorry, all of these are just authoring. They're to help teachers reflect on their design.
Can we do it
this year? Well, I don't see why not. I haven't quite got that far. Okay, back to, so normal authoring view. Next one, resizable boxes. Ah, good, so we're going to get some ones you don't like. So the idea, you could take the boxes and change their shape and possibly say, well, these first few things are a bit small, but the important thing's the forum. And so try and actually capture that in the way the sequence looks. Right. Who really likes it? Few? Okay, take it or leave it? Quite dislike it. Okay, so a significant number, quite dislike. Good. It's good if I get these wrong, okay? All right, back to normal authoring. Alternative shapes view. It's funny, this actually dates from about 3 years ago. We were getting ready to do the interface for version 2, and we sent out a range of different options to people as to how it would go. And this was the most extreme. Rather than just boxes and colours, really draw out that certain types of activities are different from each other. Would really like it? Couple. Could take it or leave it. A few. Really not keen on it. Most people. Excellent. Thank you. Okay, back to normal authoring view.
That one sort of reminds me a little bit of like the compilation process that sort of reminds me of tokenizing. Mm-hmm. And sort of some sort of similarities there.
Okay. I'll perhaps give me afterwards. I'm conscious of everyone's time, so I'll keep pushing, but yep, I want to hear more on that. Competency view. Show the competencies that go with the sequence and lay it over the top of the activities so you can actually see which ones turn up in which place. Like the idea of that? Good number. Could take it or leave it. Yeah, quite a few. Really don't like it. Yeah, some people do. Okay, good. All right, normal authoring view. Data flow view. This is a new concept that underneath the skin of lambs, increasingly data is getting moved around between tools at a layer different from the people moving between tools. And so trying to capture a sense where you grey out the sequence and draw attention to the fact that, you know, the answers from the Q&A are being fed forward to the voting, or conditions in the chat are designing a branching thing, or the grouping there is being applied to that tool. Okay, who really like that? No, quite a few. Could take it or leave it. Yeah, about the same number. Not keen on this one. Right. Gronyal and Diana have both said that that's not a good idea, and that's weighty to me. So, okay. All right. Okay. So, good idea, but that's not the right representation.
I think it's very difficult to actually have a meaning of it to get it so that you can see initially where it
was. I've got to agree. So, the idea of data flow sounds important. How we convey it, don't know.
My UML guy would like it.
Yes.
I don't.
Yeah. So, new lambs features that UML guys like, probably not the criteria I'm hunting for.
What we need is a new lamb sequence
with
all these screenshots so we can
emulate the button. All right. Individual learner view. This one's interesting. This is actually something we already have in Monitor, but we don't really convey it in Author anywhere, the sense that your sequence will have a number of individuals and that some tasks, and I've had to imagine this, they are done individually. Some are done in groups that may be different. Some are everyone doing something together across, you know, the whole activity. So trying to give a sense of the way groups of individuals cluster given the design choices you've made.
So this would be kind of, we just have a sample of...
Yeah, for authoring, it's going to have to make up a set of ones. I've pinched people from yesterday's workshop, I hope no one minds. So, because of time, really like this? Yes, some, not so many. Could take it or leave it? More? Don't like it. Yeah, quite a few don't like it. Good, okay. All right, I think this one's the last one. Time-based view.
Yes.
We have one minute. Now, I caution to add that this will not be appropriate for many sequences because you don't have strong timing to it. If you've got a very free-form sequence, very asynchronous, this just doesn't work. But if you're doing lab-based synchronous sequences where students do sets of tasks and so on, this is a view where you could actually start to show the way the sequences work.
Isn't there an alternative where the amount of time you expect the students to spend on it?
So the amount of time students spend on it is another one. The reason I've done this is because with the stop points, this is actually a hard time view of activities opening and closing, which is different to about this much time here, then about this much time there. Both of those sound important to me for different contexts. So anyway. It is, and that turns out to be, duration and elapsed time are both relevant, but they're tricky. And so certain types of sequences will be no problem for that. Others, that gets very messy. Anyway.
Where the students are?
Well, then that one, they'd be literally all of them in the first thing for 5 minutes, then they would all go to the next one.
Yeah, well then,
so the bottom two, there's no stop between those, so I've had to run them pretty much parallel because you don't know which one they're in. And so time turns out to be one of, in my view, one of the most interesting new visualizations and yet really messy and complex to work out quite how to do it. Nonetheless, if we could do it, who'd like one? Quite a few, okay? Could take it or leave it. Yeah, number and not keen on it at all. Up for you? Okay, I think. Oh, and one last point on this, and this could apply to a lot of them, not just this one, but I've described these in terms of a sort of view only. So you build your sequence and you switch out to look at another view. But I can certainly imagine with this one, you could say, oh, that first activity should actually be 10 minutes. And, you know, you could click and drag to extend the time, and that could tell LAMS to update all your gates, you know, switch the gate from 5 minutes to 10 and cascade it through. So it wouldn't have to be just a view-only environment. It could actually become an alternate way of editing a different dimension of LAMS. All right, so that's my last slide. So that's my attempt at trying to step out of the box of the visualizations we have today and try and imagine some new ones. I still feel like this is very early work and there's lots of hidden problems in it, but I have this sense that trying to find at least a few more ways of thinking about learning designs visually that would be kind of complementary or alternate views might take us even further with helping teachers to think about what they're doing. So what I'm really keen for is for your feedback, your thoughts. I hope maybe I've even planted a seed of some ideas that you will think about and come back with a new, different way or a variation that might inform what we do in the future. We're not planning to do these in LAMS tomorrow because we're really not sure what we should do, but we have a feeling there's something here worth exploring. And so I wanted to put the idea out for everyone and to see perhaps where it goes over the next months or so. And as I say, no promises, okay, we're not promising to do all that, but if we can get some, you know, get some clarity among people who care about LAMS about some other ones to do, well, then I think we would be keen to do it. All right, we're at 5 o'clock. Thank you, everyone. It's been a very long day. I appreciate your time. Don't forget your snoozy lamb on the way out. The fellas have got them on the doors.